This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt on the AM 740 Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
And Frank Proctor, the sous chef of the garden, saying, Happy New Year.
And to you, too.
Yeah, it was only last year we were together
sitting
in this studio.
Here.
I know. My gosh, it seems almost a week ago.
Just like almost yesterday.
Yeah. And then there's James Patrick Dooley.
He hasn't aged
through
a
the
year
glass,
at all.
Through the looking glass.
Yes.
We're seeing James Patrick. He handles all the calls that you'll be making to these particular numbers, my friends, to reach Charlie on The Garden Show, okay? 416-360-0740. And then anywhere else in the province, toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. And, of course, our mantra is call early, call often. Aha, but one question per call, right?
Yeah.
You can always call back, but one question per call.
Yeah.
And here's a little bell that you'll hear if you're a first-time caller. You got to let us know that, though.
That's right.
Okay?
Yeah. And you get butterfly wings.
Exactly.
That's
yes.
what the bell is all
is
about.
That yes. Butterfly wings.
Butterfly
I like that.
Yes.
Yes. Alrighty.
Okay.
And good New Year's, Charlie.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Nice and close to home.
Yeah.
Walked to our party. You know, slid.
Oh, that's
slid
yeah.
Down,
slid to your party.
I slid on the ice down to the party, right on my street. So it's very nice when you can just keep
great.
It simple. And
yeah.
And I was saying to you earlier, you know, get together with the neighbors who we often don't see in the winter.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the way you do in the summer.
Oh, sure.
In the summer, you're out chitter-chattering and having a beer and, you know, whatever,
yeah.
going to each other's houses for barbecues. In the winter, not so much. It's kind of hunkered
shoveling
down.
And getting back in the
yeah,
house. Yeah,
you know, everything hood down. Don't want to look at anybody. Don't want to engage. But with the kind of winter we've had with all this ice and branch damage and tree damage, yeah, we've been out there chatting with the neighbors quite a bit. But certainly the New Year's party is always a nice time to just you know, touch base.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's good. That's
and you,
good.
What'd you do?
Yeah, actually, we had a terrific New Year's. Our youngest son, who lives one floor above us in our apartment building, he and three grandchildren came down along with Katie, that's his wife, her mom, and we had a wonderful time.
Yeah.
Had a lobster dinner, and well, Katie and Elaine, the mom, they don't like lobster. So they had steak.
Oh.
Hey, so not a bad
How
trade-off.
How hard is that, really?
Not a bad trade-off
wow.
at all. Yeah.
That's quite
and
good.
And we toasted in the new year. And
all the girls stayed awake, did they?
They did. Right through, gosh, 20 to 1 when they went home. They were all fine. They didn't misbehave. You know, I thought they were going to go rangy.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
No.
Lose it.
No. And I read them my little story, the Christmas, the day the Welland Canal Monster met. Yeah. So the 2.5, almost 3-year-old I'm blanking on a child. Ellie. she could care less,
right.
You know.
You're
she
sure.
was off to let him blather on, you know. But the 6-year-old, she was really into it.
Really
yeah.
engaged.
So,
in
yeah,
it
was really great fun.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And that's a great story that you wrote. You are a famous published author.
I am.
That's cool.
I am a famous author.
Famous published author.
All right.
That.
Well, now, that all that being said, this is The Garden Show.
Yes. Speaking of which, I do have a few announcements.
Okay.
I did mention last week that everybody should be marking on their calendars, if you live in the Burlington area, the Burlington Horticultural Society's general meeting coming up this Wednesday, January the 8th, 7:30 p.m. Of course, they meet at the Burlington Senior Center, 2285 New Street. The topic is a floral safari, so that's going to be a nice break from all this winter weather we've been getting. And it is a photographic tour through South Africa of some of the incredible botanical gardens, obviously in gardens that Elizabeth Schlaker visited. The other ongoing meetings include next Sunday, January the 12th, the Ontario Rock Garden and Hardy Plant Society. They do meet at the Toronto Botanical Gardens, which is 777 Lawrence Avenue East at Leslie. Free admission, of course, free parking. Non-members are always welcome at any of these meetings. So if you're, you know, you need a little break from some of the snow and the ice and the crazy, today's windy. So, you know, you want to go talk gardening. You want to meet fellow gardeners. A lot of these meetings are great opportunities for just that. And the Agent Court Garden Club even mentioned that in their announcement when they sent it in. They're holding their annual meeting on Monday, January 13th. It's at 8 p.m. The speakers are Diane and Gary Westlake, who are a couple of well-known master gardeners from the Peterborough area. Mm-hmm. The Agent Court Garden Club meets at the Knox United Christian Education Center, which is on Midland Avenue, 2575 Midland Avenue, just north of Shepherd. Now, the Agent Court Garden Club, similar, like I say, to so many of these Hort societies, their purpose is all about supporting those who have an interest in or may have a curiosity to learn more about horticulture.
Okay. Yeah, friendly folks. Yeah,
exactly. Exchange ideas, beautify your local community, meet like-minded folks, have a lot of fun, eat some great food because there's always lots of great refreshments at these meetings. Free parking typically as well. So great opportunity to get out and you know, make new friends.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
All right.
And my friends, you can meet us in a moment. In a moment. We have to take a short break here. We'll be back to talk to Eve in Mississauga right after these words on The Garden Show from AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Don't change the radio station. Just because the weather changes, garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
And Frank Proctor bidding welcome to Eve calling in from Mississauga. Good day, Eve.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, welcome to the
I
show.
I have an amaryllis that I was given for New Year's. Mm-hmm. Can I start watering it now, or is it too late?
Oh, it's just you were given a bulb?
A bulb, yes.
Have you planted it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so good idea. Definitely have it planted up as soon as you can. Make sure that when you plant it, you didn't like bury the bulb, did you? You've got a good half the bulb sticking up out of the soil.
Okay,
that's very important. And put it in a pot that's not super big. You actually want the amaryllis to almost just fit into the pot. They like to be quite tight in their pots. But, you know, good potting soil, half the bulb sticking out the top. Of course, that's the pointy end up. And one thorough watering upon that moment of planting in a nice sunny windowsill, the brightest spot you can come up with, and let it sit there. Typically, we don't water again until we start to see some growth. And you should start to see some growth pretty quickly.
How long will it take to bloom?
Once you start to see the first little poking through of a little green, it's usually the flower stem that pokes out first. From the moment that starts to show, depending on the size of the bulb and also the temperatures of your home, it can be anywhere from a week to 2 weeks.
Oh.
So it's pretty quick. And that's what we love.
Thank you very much.
We love about amaryllis because they are so easy to grow and they grow so quickly that they're just an exciting plant to have because
you see the results really quickly.
With kids, with, you know, anybody who's a homebound person who can't get out. And, you know, it's just something really fun to watch. It's like watching the birds coming to the bird feeders, watching your amaryllis grow. I mean, it's just that active and that quick and energetic.
And I can keep it in my solarium?
Yes, indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
for
your call.
Okay, thank you, Eve. That leaves a line open here at 416-360-0740. And then anywhere else in the province, toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Now, before we get to our next caller, I want you to tell the folks about your homeless cat, who actually isn't homeless. He's got a condo outside Charlie's house. This is just a riot.
Well, this is a cat who we actually didn't realize was homeless for a while. And then once we did realize it didn't have a home, this is my daughter and I, back sort of late last summer, we realized that we had to step up and do something for this cat. So we tried trapping it because it's a boy cat that hasn't been neutered and is very afraid of people. So we tried to trap it so we could get it neutered and just, you know, make sure he's healthy and get him vaccinated. And because he's hanging out with all the other neighborhood cats and he's very sweet.
They're all boys.
They're all boys.
Not to worry.
They all hang out together. And but he's way too smart to be trapped because, you know, you get this trap and you put your food in at the end. Well, I caught every neighborhood cat, including my own, several times. But this little homeless guy, he's just looking at these bozo, you know, fat house cats. They go walking into the trap. Of course, it slams shut behind them. They eat the bowl of food, and then they turn around and go, hey, what's going on? Let me out. And so he's going, I am not stupid. I am not walking in there. So as a result, we never trapped him. You know, months go by. Well, the weather started getting so cold. I built him like a little waterproof, windproof shelter. And it's only open on the south side, which faces my back doors. Well, it got so cold this past week.
Oh, yeah.
I just was not feeling good about that north wind. I mean, it's not a really insulated house that I built him. It's got, you know, some felt blankets and some wool blankets and waterproof. But still, just not. Yeah. You know, when it's 30 below, that's just intense. So I thought, okay, I've got bags of leaves. So I broke them out of the ice, you know, they're in the drifts of ice there. Broke the bags of leaves out. Banged them up against the north side of his house. So he's got this like leaf insulation, which,
trust me, that's pretty good.
Looks pretty crazy. Then there's a big blanket over that just to hold, because the leaves are holding air, and of course the blanket's going to help hold the air. Then I thought, well, this needs even more. So then I dug the wheelbarrow out of the ice and I tilted the wheelbarrow up against the bags of leaves and all
that. To hold everything in place.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you've got a condo, a cat condo.
It looks a bit like a really trashy trailer park.
She's a slum landlord, folks. I'm telling you.
And it was so cold that the other, you know, house cats in the neighborhood finally came out yesterday, and they're all walking around looking at this going, what is going on
what
now?
The heck is
and
that?
They're poking their heads in going, is there more rooms in here now? Can I step?
And this little guy is quite happy.
Yeah, he's got a nice heated pad. Like, he sleeps on this heated pad that goes into the microwave.
Yeah. Right? And,
so,
of course, you
about
feed
every
him.
5 hours, I've been heating up his little pad there. And, yes, he does get fed well. He certainly enjoyed all the scraps off the 21-pound turkey carcass we had at Christmas.
Jeez, look at James. He's going, I want to move in.
I know. It's hilarious. But he's got a whole little routine worked out. You know,
well, isn't that cool?
You know, you open the door, he'll step in the back door, and he'll have his little food just inside.
But you got to leave the door open, huh?
Yeah, can't close the door. He goes ballistic. He's got to have access to the outside.
Wow.
And while he's eating, his little bed is warming up. And then, you know, it's really cute.
That's pretty darn cool.
And,
good for
he's
you,
happy.
Charlie.
He's looking pretty good considering how cold it's been, and now we got a big snowfall coming.
So. Well, yes, I understand. And then the question in my mind is the Army coming to bail us out again? I don't know. That's up in the air at the moment. We're going to be back to more callers here. Rosa in Milton is waiting. Oh, and she's a first-time caller.
Oh, get
the
your
bell. I got to get my bell handy. Back after these words from AM 740, The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than we do realize. And should little creatures become a big problem, well, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
And the sous chef of The Garden Show, Frank Proctor, saying good morning to Rosa in Milton. And, Rosa, welcome to the show, first-time caller.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good morning,
Rosa.
Good
morning to you, too.
Morning. Good morning.
Good morning and welcome.
And what's your question?
I have oleander trees, plants, whatever you like to say, and we had them outside, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we brought them all in, and now they're flowering.
Nice.
Number one. And number two, is that all right? And number three, a lot of them seem to be having pods, or I don't know how you would call them. Mm-hmm. They're not flowers.
Nope.
They're just like...
Those are seeds. Those are the fruit.
So what do I do with them? Do we take them off it?
Well, they'll eventually shrivel up and fall off, which, of course, you could then start more oleander plants from the seeds that are inside the pods. But usually what we do is when a plant is finished flowering, rather than letting those pods grow, we just cut off the flowers that are finished prior to those pods actually being formed.
So those are from the flowers that we have not cut off?
That's right.
But I see many of them falling.
Who, the flowers?
the flowers. I see them like shriveling up and then they fall down.
Right. So, but keep in mind what you're seeing falling are the petals of the flowers, which is completely normal. Once the flower is finished, the petals drop.
Right.
But what stays behind is the fruit. A good example would be, you know, when if you ever have a rose bush growing outside and when the rose finishes flowering, the petals will all fall off and it leaves behind what looks like almost a round ball on the where the flower was, which gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It almost looks like a berry of some kind. It's actually a hip. It's called a rose hip, and that's the fruit. And inside that little hip are seeds. So in the case of an oleander, they're actually pod. They look just like pods, and inside again there are seeds.
So if that was you, would you leave them there?
If it was me, I would cut off the flowers. As soon as all those little petals start to drop, I would remove the flower, the whole flower structure at that time, back to the nearest leaf. And that way the plant will not put a lot of energy into making seeds that you don't really want. Unless you
want
them.
And number two, it's all right that they are flowering now. My husband said if they're flowering now, they won't flower in the summer.
Not necessarily. The reason they're flowering now is because it often happens with our tropical plants. We put them out all summer and we look after them, we water and we fertilize. Then when we bring them in, they actually start to get a little bit stressed by the darkness in our house and the dryness of the air, and they pop all kinds of flowers out just because they are under a certain amount of duress.
Okay.
So enjoy the flowers.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, don't be concerned that it won't flower, that they won't flower again next summer. Just keep doing what you're doing. Lots of sun, don't overwater. Fertilize when flowering, once a month.
That we're not doing.
So that
fertilize
you could do.
Then.
Yeah, you could be fertilizing once a month now. Remove the flowers, as we said, once they're finished. And just as a side note, keep in mind that every single part of an oleander is very poisonous. You do not want to have pets or small children or anybody chewing on your oleander plants. That's the one thing.
And I only have one more question then.
You know what? I'm sorry, my love. We have to stick to our rule of one question per call, but you can call back.
Okay.
That's the only being fair to our next caller. As a matter of fact, who
thanks
is?
For the call.
Thank you very much, Rosa. But
thank
call
you
us,
very much.
Yeah, call us back.
Bye bye.
All righty. Richard in Fort Erie, another first-time caller. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Morning, Richard.
Good morning. Yeah, I have a question. We got this hibiscus from the Niagara Falls greenhouse, and it's a colloquial name of Japanese, but the wrote on here is Shiza petalis, and it's grown to about 3 feet in height, but it refuses to flower.
Okay, but I think what you have, tell me about, it's about 3 feet in height. See, there's so many kinds of hibiscus. There's Rose of Sharon, which is a shrub.
No, it's not.
And, yeah, and is hardy, and we just leave them outside. There's herbaceous perennial hibiscus, which I think is what you might have. And then there's tropical hibiscus. So
this is tropical.
It is, yeah, it is for sure, eh? Is it?
Yeah.
But no flowers. So tell me, what do the leaves look like?
They're oblong and they're quite shiny.
Okay, yeah, all right. And how big is the plant?
Right now it's about 3 feet in height.
And when did you get it?
It's over 2 years ago now.
Oh, and it's never flowered?
No.
And where have you got it located?
Well, sitting in the corner of our kitchen now, and it's got a little bit of light coming in from the west. But in summertime, we have it sitting outside and it doesn't do much difference.
Yes, which is good. You want to have, well, this is a plant that wants lots and lots of sun. The more sun, the better. Okay, you're absolutely right. It is tropical. Yeah, I've just actually done a quick Google here on it. Yeah, it is Shizo petalis is an actual variety of hibiscus. It's quite gorgeous, actually. Japanese, it's a tender plant, cannot survive winter. Sorry, I'm just learning about this as we go. And this is from the Wisconsin Master Gardeners. Yeah, it's an interesting looking flower. Oh, yeah. I wonder, have you seen it flower? Was it flowering when you got it from the Niagara greenhouses?
Oh, for us, never. But the flower in the greenhouse there was, the plant was about 20-some feet high and was in full flower.
Wow. All right.
And the flower looks quite different from regular hibiscus. It's elongated.
Yes, exactly. And it's tilted. It looks, in the photos I'm looking at, it also known as a fringed hibiscus or skeleton hibiscus, because it does almost grow upside down. Outward-facing flowers, but they're lacy and unusual. Pendant flowers dangle from slim, arching stems in the tropics. It's an evergreen perennial, of course. Can be grown as a houseplant or seasonal annual. Now, unless there's anything different about this plant, typically hibiscus, and I'll quickly check, but I'll let you know that for a hibiscus to be happy, it wants as high of humidity as you can provide, and that might mean providing a pebble tray below or having a humidifier. You mentioned it's in the kitchen, which is great because kitchens tend to be more humid than the rest of the house. They do not want any kind of drafts, hot or cold. Regular room temperature is fine. The trick to getting them to flower is don't water too often. Whatever you do, do not keep this plant consistently moist. Water thoroughly. Let the water come out the drainage holes in the bottom of the pot. Let the plant sit in that water for 10 to 15 minutes. If there's any excess, dump it out of the tray. After that, it's just a matter of letting it dry down quite thoroughly between waterings, to the point those shiny leaves stop being shiny. They lose their shine. Okay. They'll even droop a bit. That tells you this plant is dry. Again, now it's time to water thoroughly. And I find that that kind of extreme watering will often cause it to start flowering.
Does it need fertilizer of any kind?
We only fertilize when the plant is actively growing. So, of course, your active growth period typically starts around March, runs right through the spring and summer. So that is when you would fertilize with a flowering plant fertilizer.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, we were just wondering what it would need.
Yeah. But, have you ever pruned it at all?
No.
Probably not if it's 3 feet tall. And is it a single stem or is it a bushy plant?
Right now it's a little bush.
Okay. But big bush by the sounds of it. That's a fair sized bush. So, if you look closely at it in about a month, and if you don't see any evidence of any buds forming on the tips, that's when I would do some pruning. Because recognize that if you do get it to flower, it's going to be like 4 feet tall, and you're not going to want to start pruning it then.
Yeah.
So you may want to consider, I always do quite hard pruning on hibiscus late in the winter, early in the spring, and that way when it does flower, it might even be August or September by the time it flowers, but of course the plant is a reasonable size.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got, you were asking about the other hibiscus. We have Rose of Sharon. It's a huge bush in the backyard.
Outside, yeah.
And we got two different kinds of hibiscus as well. One we got from a lady in Niagara on the Lake.
Uh-huh.
And the flower on that one is almost like the Maltese cross, but has one too many petals.
Oh, neat. Yeah, and it
changes from a really dark red to a pink to
almost white.
I don't know. Like, I'm not good in colors here. Yeah. But from the same bush.
Yeah, they fade. They come out really dark, and then they fade over a couple of days. But
and
they're
the other
monster
hibiscus,
flowers.
Has a flower the size about 6 inches across.
Yeah. Very nice. Oh,
and,
good for you.
But it also comes right from the roots every spring.
Right. Yeah, the root stays alive. That's a herbaceous perennial. If there's anything you can do to up the light levels on your indoor hibiscus, you would also facilitate flower bud formation. So even if that means getting a little grow light to suspend above it or, you know, have on a kind of a floor lamp or something like that, that would help as well, because hibiscus like as bright light as you can possibly come up with.
Yeah, we're sitting in the greenhouse, actually. It's getting indirect light only.
Back in Niagara, you mean?
Yes.
Right. It's getting indirect, but it's also got a whole bunch of other things going on, like high humidity. That's very hard to produce in our homes without condensation dripping down the walls.
Yeah. No, that's not good for the house.
No, not at all. So, yeah, if you can bump the light levels, that would be good.
Okay. Well, listen, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks so much, Richard, for your call,
Happy
Richard.
New Year.
And you
and
too.
The same to you. And call again, for heaven's sakes. Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting. Him and his wife are clearly quite the gardeners.
Absolutely. Well, that's what this show is all about, talking to the gardeners. And
well,
what do you
for
think?
That.
Hello.
I just was speaking of gardeners, remember we had the editor of the Farmer's Almanac here on the show?
Yes, yes.
Right? Okay, so I just wanted to, with all this crazy weather, I just wanted to check my almanac.
Yeah.
I want to see how
accurate this is. Yeah.
Well said. So here's what the almanac said for December, late December. It's interesting. So there was supposed to be periods of rain and snow in the east, snow in the west, mild temperatures on the 18th and 19th of December. However, then it was sunny and very cold from the 20th to 29th. Then it was heavy rain and snow, then flurries and very cold with more snow the 30th and 31st. So not that far off. I mean, it talks about rain. I mean, we had, you know, freezing rain. For early January, of course, it's kind of interesting. It says that it's the temperatures are going to be a little bit above average. Precipitation is expected between the first and third snowy periods. Cold weather, which we've had. And, of course, it just says cold. Doesn't say how cold. Between the fourth and eighth, flurries and cold. Well, of course, exactly what have we got coming?
Hello.
Big snowstorm.
And cold.
And cold.
Yeah.
And the synopsis, of course, was interesting, too. It just says that for Southern Ontario, December, late December, early and late January, and then early to mid-February are going to be the coldest periods. Precipitation above normal in the east and below normal in the west being, you know, Thunder Bay west. Snowfall below normal in the east and much greater than normal in the west, which I think is true. They've been getting a ton of snow.
Oh, my gosh.
Out there.
Yeah.
The snowiest periods will be in early to mid-December, late December, early January, and then mid-January. We ain't seen nothing yet.
No, I don't think so.
I'm afraid to say.
Okay, well,
better watch out. I'm going to have cats lined up.
You know,
move into
my,
the condo.
My eye drifted from your lovely face
to
the monitor in the studio here, and I see a name showing up from Brantford and a first-time caller at that. Janet, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Enjoy your show immensely.
Thank you.
But you left me hanging.
Oh, why?
Well, it's regarding the amaryllis. Mm-hmm. I have a Minerva amaryllis,
nice.
Which is lovely.
Yeah,
but and I can't hear you very well right now. But in the meantime, it's going to flower and it's going to do as you said. But what happens when it dies off? What am I supposed to do?
When the flowers are finished, you will get out your sharp little scissors or pruners and you'll remove the flower that's at the top of a big green stem. Just cut it off once all the petals have dried and fallen off. You'll have that green stem standing there. It's hollow, but it is green, just like the leaves that will be emerging from the bulb along the same process. You want to maximize the green growth coming out of your amaryllis bulb sitting in that sunny window because, of course, what's happening is the green leaves and the green stems are absorbing sunlight, converting that sunlight into carbohydrates, storing the carbohydrates back into the bulb, so fattening the bulb up again so that it will be ready to go after it's gone through this fattening process. Then it has a dormant process, and then it's ready to go to flower again a year from now.
A year from now. Mm-hmm. I have a bit of a situation, though. Here, I had it in the window. Mm-hmm. It grew really well when we had the sun, and I think it got a chill because I've had to prop up the stem because it flopped over. There's a bit of a brown spot, and I'm worried that, but it's going to flower. The flower is coming, so I'm sort of babying this amaryllis, hoping that it doesn't totally collapse on me.
You know what I would do? Because you're right. I mean, the flowers sometimes are huge, and as you point out, they can fall over. The whole plant can get knocked over by these big, tall, top-heavy flowers. But the thing we don't always realize is that the flower of an amaryllis lasts longer as a cut flower than it does attached to the bulb.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Yeah. So my impulse would be for you to get your sharp little pruners out right now, cut that flower off just above that brown spot you referred to, get it into a vase of whatever is of an appropriate size, and enjoy the flower. It will carry on and be beautiful, and you won't have that issue of having to prop the whole thing up.
Okay, so just when I do that, and then just carry on maintaining
the bulb.
the bulb water periodically? Or?
Exactly. Feel the soil. It's, mm-hmm. Remember, it's a bulb, and it's easy to rot bulbs if the bulb sits in soggy soil. So we don't ever water a bulb in a pot unless the soil feels quite dry to the touch.
So I could wait a month or so.
Oh, it might be more often than a month or so. Just depends on the temperature of the room and the amount of soil that's in the pot, you know, how long the moisture will maintain.
You've got to do it by touch and feel.
You really do. Right? That's right. Yeah, don't ever be afraid to stick your finger right in. if that bothers you, there are little gizmos called moisture meters. Yeah. It's a little probe you can stick into the soil, and it'll tell you what the moisture level is down below the surface.
Okay.
Okay.
All righty. I'll have to call you back. I got one about an orchid.
Okay,
good
great.
Good for you.
Give us a call back.
We'll look forward to that, Janet.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you very much. Yeah, the Garden Show here at AM 740. And let's see, Patrick from Whitby is with us. Good morning, Patrick.
Yes, a good morning. I called previously on a past show regarding my frozen tree out front that turned into what... could be construed as the sickest willow tree you've ever seen.
Wow.
Because of the ice?
Yeah. Is it a weeping willow?
No, it's not a weeping willow, but it looked like
it looks
one
like it because of the ice,
Because of all the ice that was all over it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I just wanted to give you some feedback.
Sure.
There was a day where, 2 days where it was relatively warm, I went out there with a broomstick and whacked away all the ice, and the tree has now responded by returning to roughly about 90% of its former glory.
My, that's good.
Hey, that's good, yeah.
They did bounce quite well, I found, all the trees as the ice came
nothing,
off.
Nothing broken. None of the branches were broken or anything like that. It was just bent all the way down to the ground and was like 40 feet wide instead of being 20 feet high.
Yeah, yeah. That's good, though.
It has come back. No pruning necessary.
However, if I were you, would this be a willow that you have for pussy willows in the spring? Is it that kind?
No, it's not. It's not a willow tree. I don't know what kind of tree it is.
I thought it was.
But it ended up looking like a
weeping.
Because of all the ice.
Yeah. So depending, of course, on what kind of tree it is and whether it flowers or has fruit and that sort of ornamental value, all of us need to be thinking about pruning all of our trees and shrubs this spring or summer, just to bring the canopy in closer to the main stem to try and avoid the kind of issue we all saw with the heavy ice. Now, it could have been just heavy snow that would have done that same collapse to so many of the trees. And you're absolutely right, Patrick. I remember you called last week and we were talking about whether these plants would stand back up. And it was very interesting, even in my neighborhood, to see all the birches once the ice melted. Some of the plants in my yard stood up virtually just the way they had if the branches didn't break with the weight of the ice. So we will be trimming broken bits, and all of us need to be thinking about narrowing the canopies just to alleviate all that surface area for ice or heavy snow next year to pile up on.
Oh, I'd most definitely agree with that. As a sidebar, that website that you mentioned about arborists doesn't have the ability to find an arborist in Canada.
Oh,
really?
I tried to look for one in the Whitby area, and it came up with nothing found. So
okay, so there was two websites. One of them was WWISA, which stands for the International Society of Arboriculture. So ISA Ontario. So one word, ISAOntario.com.
The other site.
Yeah, the other one is American, the treesaregood.org.
Yeah, that's the one that I found quickly. I couldn't remember it by the time I got to my computer.
I know that feeling. So, all right, so forget the treesaregood.org, except it's got good tips on that website.
Yeah.
But for a local arborist, certified arborist, isaontario.com.
I will check that site too, isaontario.com.
That's it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I just wanted to give you some feedback on that.
Thanks for the update.
That's great, Patrick.
Appreciate it.
You have a good day.
And you
Happy
too.
New Year.
Thanks.
The same to you. And
remember, it's interesting that Patrick's calling. Remember I gave you all those tips last week about how important it was to recognize that if you needed somebody to do some work for you, make sure they're certified arborist. Well, what should happen last Saturday when I went home?
Yeah.
And I was actually doing what Patrick was doing. I had the broom out and I was like sweeping or trying to gently knock ice off of all my bent trees. And this truck drives up and this guy gets out and he goes, "Hi there, I'm an arborist. Do you want me to do some work for you?" And I went, "Oh, here we go. Here we go. You know, a man and a chainsaw."
Yeah.
So I go, so you're an arborist, are you? And he goes, "Yeah, I am." I go, "A certified arborist?" He goes, "Oh, yeah." I went, "Give me your business card. We'll talk." So sure enough, I went, I looked him up. He was not a certified arborist. He was just, you know.
Out there making a buck.
Yeah, just had his chainsaw.
And ruining some trees.
Well, you know, who knows? Who knows what kind of work he would do?
Yeah.
But just never assume that that
anybody
somebody
with a chainsaw
knows,
is an arborist.
Knows what they're doing. And
also,
there is a big call right now.
Master Gardeners of Ontario, you had given that a website as well as a place to find arborists, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe McGoy, M-G-O-I.
Yeah.
McGoy,
I think so.
Master Gardeners of Ontario Incorporated, is
Anywho.
A good website as well. Yeah, so just be careful of those people that call themselves arborists that aren't. Because you know what? Every single certified arborist in all of Canada could currently be employed right now in the Toronto and GTA because they're so desperate for certified arborists getting to work to do the cleanup.
Speaking of
and
getting
the parks,
to work.
They're pretty worried about the parks.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Well, you know, you go out, take your granddaughters to the park on a beautiful day in April, and all of a sudden limbs start dropping out of trees. You don't see that coming because they've been hanging there since January. They need to be all cleaned
all
up.
All cleaned up, well, you know, I never thought about that part of it.
Yeah, that's the, the danger part of it. It's not just the, oh, my gosh, what a mess. It's the fact that there's stuff hanging in these trees that
is going to come down.
It's going to come down eventually. Yeah. And the last thing you want to do is be anywhere near it when it comes down because it's fast. When limbs fall from trees, you don't have a lot of warning.
Well, I'm going to lose a limb here if we don't get to a commercial break. I'm getting the break sign from Patrick Dooley.
Okay, I want to talk about
And we'll be back to talk to Mary in Brampton after these words on The Garden Show from AM 740.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
And happy to say in this brand new year of 2014, yours truly, Franklin Proctor, along for the ride here is the sous chef of the garden, saying hi.
Yeah, you're the best.
Well, I am, you know. Mary in Brampton, welcome along to the show.
Good morning and Happy New Year.
Thank
morning.
You.
Well, today's the day for amaryllis and hibiscus.
It sounds like it.
I planted my amaryllis just this morning, third season.
Oh, neat.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm calling about my hibiscus. Mm-hmm. This is the third season. Last time I cut it back, I didn't have any blooms at all last summer.
Mm-hmm.
Brought the plant in and started blooming.
Mm-hmm.
I want to prune it again, but I'm not sure on how deep I should prune it.
It's not flowering now, is it, or is it still?
I have buds on it.
Okay. So what I would do if I was in your position is I would wait until all those buds are done. Typically, it will continue to flower now through January and February. If by early to mid-March it's still got buds and blooms, then you might have to start pruning those off. But in the meantime, don't prune until you absolutely need to. And of course, mid-March is about the optimal time to do your pruning. How much can you prune? Well, rule of thumb is you can always remove up to one-third of a plant at any one time. So that's kind of a general rule of thumb. However, hibiscus are typically very tough and very vigorous. So you can be pretty mean to them. I've pruned off three quarters of them sometimes. I've taken it right down to where there's one leaf left. As long as you've got at least one bit of green. Because remember, if you prune everything off and there's no leaves and it's just brown stems, that will kill it because the plant can't actually photosynthesize and move forward. So you've got to always leave a couple of leaves there. Sometimes I've pruned one whole side very hard and then left the other side with the leaves. And then as the side where I've pruned starts to pop some buds and leaves, then I go in and I prune the other side really hard, taking off all the leaves, and then that eventually catches up. So there's ways to really prune them back hard without killing them. Just depends on sort of if it's something that's so big you really need to get it under control, or it's just a tidy up.
Well, it's getting to the point of getting out of control.
Yeah, yeah. They are vigorous plants, there's no question. Sometimes, too, they have very vigorous roots. So in March, if you're looking for something to do that sometimes can be a really positive thing for a hibiscus, while you're doing this above-ground pruning, pop the plant out of its pot, get out your pruners, prune the roots back, or sometimes even get a big steak knife and just, you know, saw back mm-hmm. on some of those roots. Wash the pot out. Don't put it into a bigger pot because you don't want the plant to get bigger. But you do want to go back into the same pot after scrubbing it. Fresh soil.
Okay.
Yeah, the root pruned root ball back into that same size pot with fresh soil. That is very invigorating for the plant. But of course, it will stay more dense and compact rather than just growing big, you know, 3 foot long stems.
It's not dense. You know, the leaves are not. I mean, they're healthy. They're good, but stupid thing is still setting buds.
Well, don't complain. They're pretty.
Well, I'm saying, but you keep me from trimming you down.
I know.
Keep putting up buds.
Well, and then, you know, sometimes too, it's like saying, okay, there's a stem with no buds. All right, I'll cut that one back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then another stem finishes with all its flowering. And then, you know, even if the pruning takes 2-3 weeks to do, at least you maximize enjoyment of the buds and you're getting your pruning done at the same time.
I think I pruned too severe last season because it really didn't do anything until late August, early September.
Yeah, remember fertilizing is appropriate in the spring and summer with the hibiscus. Lots of sun is appropriate. And as I mentioned, that fresh potting soil can also be super invigorating.
Like I said, this is almost getting to be a family member because it's been on 4 seasons.
I know the feeling.
The hibiscus that ate Brampton is.
Okay, but, guys, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mary.
Immensely.
Thanks for calling,
thank
Mary.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Joan in Brantford, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a problem with our calla lily. Mm-hmm. Last year, it didn't bloom. It was green, but it didn't bloom. Mm. So then we took the bulbs out of the pot, and they're in a pail of sawdust now.
Okay.
And we're just wondering, when we go to replant it, what size pot should we use? How many bulbs do we put in, and when do we do this?
Great questions. I would be potting those up in late February, early March.
Right.
Depending on the size of the little tubers you're working with, I'd probably go as many as 3 per 6-inch pot. So 3 little bulbs or tubers in each 6-inch pot. Fresh potting soil, of course. They're a little tricky to tell which way is up because, unlike most bulbs, they don't have a pointy end up. There is no point unless there's kind of a bit of a dimple, which is sort of a pointy end. But look and you will see the little scraggly bit of roots from last year. So if you go scraggly root down, you'll have this kind of a pimple up. And that'll be the right orientation on those 3. And I would go with, like I say, 3 per pot. Get the water thoroughly, get them into a bright spot. Once they are going outside, when you're frost-free, put them in a spot where they'll get morning sun and afternoon shade. And I will usually bury the pot under into the garden. So it looks like the plants are actually growing in the garden as opposed to sitting above ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that way I find that does seem to help with the moisture. They like a moist, kind of a foresty feel for their sort of best happiness. So shady, below other, you know, shrubs, kind of like an understory plant.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
That you don't want them out in a windy spot or out in a super sunny spot.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Okay. And so we'll do that and see what happens. And thank you very much for your help.
Our pleasure. Let us know.
Thank you very
we
much.
We will.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, okay,
Mary.
Joan. You bet. And we're going to
write Mary down. That was Joan.
Joan, yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's all right. No problem at all. We had been speaking to Mary in Brampton.
You're correct.
And we're going to speak in a moment to Eva in Innisfil. How about that? We've got a little commercial break coming up right now on The Garden Show.
Don't change the radio station. Just because the weather changes, garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
And let's see how things are doing in Innisfil. Have a chat here with Eva. Good morning, Eva.
Good morning to you, too, and have a happy new year.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show.
I have a problem with my mandevillas, and it's the problem is the one that I have those little bugs on it, and they're all over in the house, and it's annoying because it gets into your ear, your eyes, and everywhere else.
Are they like fruit flies?
Well, yeah.
Little black?
Like it's fruit fly, you know, and the last time I listened to the show. Mm-hmm. A gentleman was asking the same question, excuse me. And you were telling him that he has to buy those sticky sticks.
Yes.
Which one I did. Uh-huh. But it doesn't seem to me going away. It's still there. And that was about 2 weeks ago.
Okay, so you bought the sticky sticks, and that's a product which comes with little plastic stakes.
Right.
And then yellow, very sticky, almost like flypaper.
Right.
And you put, so you have one mandevilla or many mandevilla?
I have two mandevillas, and then I put in each pot two of those sticky sticks.
Okay, I was going to say you want to put several, yeah, okay. And do you have any other plants?
Oh, yeah, I have other plants, too, but it doesn't seem to me affecting them. But the mandevillas is just trying to die out on me.
Oh, well, okay, so what I would do is go to every plant at in your house, with the side of your hand, bang the side of the pots, or just, you know, pick up the pots and put them down sharply.
Mm-hmm.
If there are what are called fungus gnats inside the soil, you'll see a little cloud of black flies, look like fruit flies, fly up from the pot.
Yeah.
So identify where you have the fungus gnats located. Get those sticky sticks into every single pot, that at least one or two or three sticks into every pot that's got evidence of the gnats.
Right.
The other thing you have to do is you have to slow way down on your watering. Where you've got... Oh, you did. Okay, good.
Oh, yeah, because you told that to the gentleman, too, that it has to be almost dried out, and then you water it again.
Yeah, so you're going to water thoroughly, but you're going to allow the plants to dry right down between waterings.
Mm-hmm.
So the surface will be quite dry. You'll feel the surface. If there's sponginess in the potting soil, don't water yet. You know what I mean? Like, you really want to get it as dry as you can before you water thoroughly. That way you'll find you will kill a lot of the fungus gnats that are in the soil, because the fungus will die because it's so dry in the soil.
I mean, those little bugs, the sticky sticks picks up a whole bunch of them, and I'm changing them on the weekly basis.
Yeah, okay, good.
And it's still there.
Yeah, it's not an instant fix. There is no instant fix. I mean, I'm just trying to think.
Am I going to lose my plants?
Probably. No, you shouldn't lose the plants. The fungus gnats don't actually eat the plants. They strictly eat the fungus that's in the soil. So you're unlikely to lose the plants. I mean, back, you know, 20 years ago, back when I used to work in a retail garden center, we used to sell a product that was used. It was an insecticide that people would use as a soil drench. So they would mix up the insecticide, and then they would water the plant with the insecticide mixed with the water. It would go through the soil, and it would kill the fungus gnats that way. So a very quick way of getting rid of the bugs. It smelled pretty bad, and many people, you know, didn't like the smell inside their homes in the middle of winter. Of course, now it's all off the market, so those insecticides aren't even available.
Right.
Would it be worse? I mean, you could try a soap and water soil drench,
I did the soapy water when I took it out from outside, and then before I put it into the pot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I washed it off and thoroughly, and then I brought it in.
Yeah.
Okay. And it seems to me it didn't help.
Right. And do you think the gnats were in the plant when it was outside, or you think this just showed up?
I have a feeling that I brought it in from outside because it started to doing that, right? And then I was trying to do the sticky stick, and then it just doesn't seem to me working.
Well, it might be worth trying the soap drench, soap and water, not detergent, but soap and water drench. Take the plants into the bathtub, put the plants there, and then, you know, don't do this when you've just watered. Make sure that they do need to be watered, and do a watering with soap. And, of course, your mixture is 40 parts water to one part soap.
Right.
And just do a real thorough watering with the soapy water. That will annihilate a bunch of the insects as well. Again, will it get rid of all of them? No. But you will, again, lower the population.
But don't take it out from the pot.
No, leave it in the pot. Just do a good watering into the pot instead of straight water. Use soap and water.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Try that. That might be a way to, again, just lower that population. Keep the sticky sticks going, though.
You know, yeah. Eva, I've got an idea here that maybe it could work. It could work. you get over it, and Charlie was absolutely right. Smack the pot with the side of your hand, or just the palm of your hand. But have your vacuum cleaner ready.
Vacuum cleaner,
and just... When those guys come up, boom, they're gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just don't suck the plant.
Yeah. Don't suck the plant down. But at last resort, it might work.
You never know. Thanks for that, Frank.
Okay, Eva. You take care.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And, you know, I don't charge.
Because I love my mandevillas.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you are. I give these little wondrous tips at no charge whatsoever from the goodness of my heart.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Have a nice day.
Thank you. You too. So why we call Frank the sous chef? The undergardener.
The undergardener, yes,
I don't
here
think
I
you're
am.
Ever going to graduate from that, I'm afraid to say.
Oh, no, you're not. You brag to folks that you love putting me down, keeping me underfoot, as it were.
Undergardening.
Yes.
That's a good job for you, though.
Well, now it is. And you know something? Sad to say, but we're coming to the end of our run here.
We are.
I mean, we're going to be back next week. I'm not saying... The end of our run.
Oh my God. Right.
No,
somebody
no.
canceled the show and I missed that.
Should have seen her eyes. No, today's run.
We'll be back next week. And of course, you know, I just want to remind people that website, WWISA Ontario, IS as in Sam, A Ontario.com for a certified arborist in your area who is going to be so busy right now they can't come and help you for a
Not
couple
right
of months
away.
Anyway. But
James Patrick Dooley, thank you.
Thank you, James. And thank you, oh, best undergardener,
Franklin
Proctor.
You're welcome, best old gardener.
I'll see you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.